둘, 셋, 파!
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
You can hear me?
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here, for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep up with your favorite artists, discover those new ones. Of course, you can grab us anywhere you get podcasts from, including Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Don't forget to leave the series a rating. Give a review if you feel so inspired as well. That always helps out a ton. We've had some great guests on lately. Victoria Justice, the band Travis, Fran Healy of the band Travis, Ashton Irwin from 5 Seconds of Summer, Roger McGuinn from The Birds, Common, and Pete Rock. Kylie Cantrell, she's starring in the new Descendants movie. Eels, we're here. 21 Pilots, Anthony Michael Hall, Annabeth Gish, Kurtwood Smith of that 90s show, that 70s show. Just an example of what you can get and hear and see when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Mark Gardner of the band Ride. They recently returned with their 7th LP, Interplay. We're going to be talking about how this latest batch of songs are finding their true voice while on tour, the legal troubles they faced with their ex-management, and how that pushed them to look back at the bands they loved while growing up, such as Tears for Fears, Talk Talk, Kate Bush, and Depeche Mode, which inevitably left a mark on the sound of the tracks. Mark's also going to discuss the obstacles of touring as a mid-tier band, connecting with their earlier catalog, and why he looks at all of their albums as their last. All that and more, we're talking Interplay. It's Kyle Meredith with Mark Gardner of Ride.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay. I am enjoying a rare respite from the tour. I have a day off today in Vancouver. So it's instead of being on the bus from Denver to Vancouver, I flew yesterday just to kind of give myself a little bit of a reset break, because me and the bus aren't the best friends. So I don't really sleep very well on it. And being in my 50s, I need my sleep now.
Yeah, I understand completely. I you know, you have those people who are just made for it, right? Willie Nelson still on the road at 90, not as much,
yeah.
But you know, just like, you have people that do that, like they have no problem with it. And I'm okay with a little road trip around the country for a few days, but after that, I'm with you.
I've kind of got used to it now, because we're into our second sort of third weeks now on the bus. But the first week is horrendous, because it's just it's just not something you're used to at all again, because you've just been sleeping normally. So anyway, but yeah, so I mean, it's kind of got easier, and I can sort of then see why people go on and on, because if you just keep touring and it just becomes your normality. It's just the shock of coming from something that isn't that onto a bus, and you know, it takes a bit of time to, you know, and then the first week you're just all over the shop basically. But anyway, that's enough of my moaning. Other than that, it's been really good. The show's been good. So
I'm glad to hear that. And because what, you know, we got to meet a few weeks ago, a couple weeks ago now in Philly. You guys were in Philly. And I thought, you know, when you're on tour, what a funny little thing those little moments are. Because, you know, we were joking about it backstage. Like, here's a noon show in front of a very noon crowd and a lot of radio people who have just done a conference for a whole week and are, you know, just done.
Jaded. I feel like me after I've been on tour for a week. Yeah, no, I mean, it is, and yet from my point of view, it's just quite a good on that first week. It was just a good I do actually like, despite them not sleeping, I do like the thing of playing all the time, because it really plays the songs in. So for me, and then, you know, we played pretty much, I think, all new songs, so it was it's been really good to, I knew that would happen. America's amazing for that, American tours, just to get played in, you know, the songs, so it becomes second nature. And I think we're doing that, and that felt really good, that show, because we'd had a few days prior to that, and then that's when it started to feel like it's becoming second nature now, and you're not having to think about it too much, which is good, because we don't want to think too much. That's where things go wrong.
You gotta feel it.
Yeah, in a way, feel it and not have to think about it, and just then perform it in a way. It's good when you get to that place. And you know, rehearsals don't really do it. You rehearse, but it's nothing like just doing it at gigs. You know, it's like I don't know, there's something about gigs that make you really, yeah, just on it. You know, get on it, and the songs just get really good. Yeah,
yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, you know, not that you have to be one band or the other, but you know, there are some bands. It's like, we've written the songs, we're going to play it like the album, but for Ride, for so much, you know, atmosphere, as you will all put in there, like, how often do you let those songs open up? I wouldn't call it jamming with you all, but there is that sense that, you know, these songs can expand further than what they were written to be.
Yeah, I think they always do live, because it's just the nature of live and different rooms and different sounds and sound systems, and I think, you know, we do stay pretty structured with the new material mostly, yeah, because we have some back in as well, because we don't have a keyboard player with us, and there's some synths going on, so we need to sort of stay in sync with everything. But yeah, I mean, there's always an element of I think in a way the new songs take on their own life form, and the more they get played live, and it's usually then towards the end of a tour you think, God, I wish we could re-record them all now, because it kind of, things grow, you know, songs develop in front of people and audiences, for sure. They become their own beast in a way.
That'd be a really fun, I mean, bands talk about that, you know, I don't know that, surely somebody's done it, but I just can't name anybody off the top of my head. That'd be a really fun little experiment. Like, okay, here it is. This is the route we're going to take. And right after we get off the road, we're going to go back in and re-record them and see.
Yeah.
You know, like
it's
a Christmas
true. It's
EP.
Weird. I mean, because it's always... Exactly. It's usually always the other way around. I mean, unless, of course, we do actually do some live recordings along the way. So sometimes those can actually be released. So, you know, live is real. And I like it when it's real in that sense. I mean, I do also love, I mean, obviously, I run my main business is a studio. You know, I run a studio in Oxfordshire. Oh, it's all sound. So I kind of, you know, I'm constantly mixing, mastering, recording, podcasting, you know, well, I do podcast production in there, so I do a lot of stuff in there, so that's always kind of, I love that environment, and I love that creative environment and making things, so that always feels great. And that's what I mean, it's always then a bit of a shock to the system when you start taking the stuff out of the studio and you start playing it, but you know, like I say, that they do start to kind of become their own, something different in a way.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Mark Gardner of Ride. That studio, which I think is quickly becoming legendary, but it being, you know, the first time that Ride has done an album in your studio. Like, I hear so much about how studios have changed, you know, for especially a lot of young producers And it's all about the plugins, you know, and it's not even about a studio a lot of the time. It's just about the laptop or whatever. But I get that sense that you found this middle ground. Like how do you keep the humanity in the machine?
Well, interestingly, I purposely went almost a bit beyond the middle ground to create a more maybe old style studio, in the sense that I've got a really a great console with a sidecar console, which are kind of the best of British consoles, you know, an SSL and an Eve. I won't get too techy and boring because people fall asleep, but there's lots of valves involved. So I understand what digital brings, and it's an amazing, I'm not anti-digital in any way, and I really embraced it. I love CDs. But what I think kind of starts to get lost is valves, and it's just that sort of console and beautiful consoles which actually do incredible things to the music. I mean, they, you know, there's a warmth, there's a width, there's a depth, there's a weight which comes with all of that sort of lovely valve stuff, as it was in those old studios. I mean, those old studios, a lot of them couldn't run anymore because you have to leave those old mixing consoles on, and then the electricity bills are so high that I think that's what brought down a lot of the studios. But with what I got in there, and I worked alongside SSL to get, you know, the right thing, I don't have to leave it on, so it doesn't kind of kill me when, you know, it would still be on now, some of those old studios, when I'm not there with bills. But it does capture that they've created great consoles which have got, it's all about the analog sound basically. So when I'm mastering, for example, I would say 80, 85, 90% of my process is just purely analog. And because I know that what people are sending me is coming from a computer. So when I bring that analog into it and then send it back, they're like, it makes a huge difference. And people hear that. So I mean, I just thought if I don't do something that really makes a difference for people to come into a studio, or for people to send me work to be, you know, that I work on in the studio, then it's pointless. I'm just finished, because as you said earlier, you know, people can do so much on their laptops in their bedroom. So I had to do something that made a big difference from that, you know what I mean? And because I did, and it was a huge leap of faith, a huge sort of roll of the dice in a way, it is working. Just, you know, so it's not working at the moment because I'm here in Vancouver, so I'm not there, but you know, and I think going back to the ride scenario, I think it's the first time we felt at home, you know, in a studio. I mean, you do feel at home in other studios, but you're always kind of aware of the clock ticking and you know, the money meter going up and up. So I think we were able to, after COVID, you know, the adversity of COVID, and after we'd also been through some pretty horrible stuff with an ex-manager who's kind of trying to take us to court on, trying to make us his pension fund, basically, and he's not doing anything. So there's a lot of pretty horrible stuff we went through, all the stuff you read about. And I think in a way then it brought us closer, and we had a sort of home-based type of studio for the first time where we could kind of just react to what was being thrown our way, and that stuff that was coming our way basically threatened the existence of the band. It wasn't sort of just sort of small fry. So I think when you come through that, and I think we had a sort of collective realization of, like, when we just got together initially, we used to work like this, and it was all about music, and we just, you know, that was kind of how a lot of the first records and those songs were made. We were just in a room together at our art school sort of drama room, you know, just jamming and playing. And we were able to do that with this album in a way. We jammed a lot, we played a lot. We just, without thinking we've got to make an album, we knew we did, and that was in the back of our minds, but we had more time to do it. And certainly lots of parts of this album for me became great because I had some time personally to, it almost like when people have left and there's some great music that's there, then to then really think about top lines and turning what were some jams and great instrumentals into great songs. And I possibly wouldn't have had those moments. I mean, I certainly had that moment with, you know, with the engineer Richie, and with songs like Monaco. I had that moment with I Came to See the Wreck, which was actually before Richie was even engineering the session. That was when I was trying to engineer as well as be in the band. And I was sort of jumping between two rooms with some candles on in the live room. And it just, you know, just checking my levels and, you know, making sure that I thought I was capturing some good vocals with I Came to See the Wreck, and it was just kind of almost like a personal exorcism that time, of some pretty rough stuff that we'd all come through. And you know, it's like anything in life and sport. I think it's the tough stuff that, you know, when you can come back from that, it makes you stronger and makes you better. I know it's all a bit cliche, but there's reason why that is cliche, because it really does do that.
You can hear it. I mean, I Came to See the Wreck. God, it's like I've heard you in a lot of your interviews talk about, you know, how that sort of looks back on a rough time in your own life. But man, it absolutely soars, like the music in that just takes off. What is it you said you were hoping, or you could see it becoming your Blue Monday? Was that it?
Oh yeah. Or like, yeah, I mean, in a way I did. I mean, I wanted to release it as I would like to have been a single, although I don't really know how singles work anymore, because it's so confusing. I mean, a single to me is something that you release, gets on the radio, which makes sense. We did that with, you know, so I'd think about Six Music, but there's lots of other ways singles are released, and it's pretty confusing for me. But I would have liked to have come back with that track in a way, because I just thought it was not really a single in that way. And as we did with Leave More Behind years ago, but then we obviously had some more singly sounding tracks, which were great as well. So it was a real tough round of emails and stuff with management to sort of go, what do we do? And but yeah, I think with a song like Wreck, yeah, I mean, it's certainly like I did see it as like that, a kind of a Blue Monday, a darker thing. And I mean, yeah, for me, it's just me really talking about being pretty lost, really, and feeling part of a system that really broke down, which obviously was the sort of reflection on what went before for everybody, which is COVID. So, you know, and just a lot of time in isolation, which I don't think does. It's quite nice for a while, but then I think we're all social creatures. You know, we all, as a human species, we all kind of survive because of you know, society and coexistence with people, not just on your own all the time. There's a lot of alone time in the studio, you know, during that really dark period. So which was good and bad, you know, but I mean, that definitely is a reflection on feeling that I'm just kind of losing my mind here. So I think maybe people relate to that, I don't know.
Well, it's interesting. It's always interesting for a songwriter, especially when you've got years behind you. You know, you've got over 30 years of songs that you're singing. And you have a song like this now, but in those moments in the past, like, do you find that you still connect in the same way to any of those earlier songs that you wrote? Like the who you were? It's
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, on the Nowhere Tour, you do have a sort of weird connection back to it. And it's almost like you reconnect to it through the people that are in the room with you, kind of going back on that trip as well. But then in another way, the songs, like I said earlier, they almost sort of become something a little bit different now to the songs we recorded, you know, back in the 90s, I think, especially with Nowhere. So it sort of almost becomes quite present in a way. You're not always, doesn't feel past, because it's happening here and now, and a lot of people are still really appreciating that. So, but yeah, I mean, I do feel a stronger connection to Interplay songs now we're touring than the old songs, you know, honestly, because it just feels something that is more recent to me, and it's more like in the here and now for me. So, you know, when you play some of the old songs, it's a little trip back, and it's nice, you know. But I don't feel I just do feel more connected, yeah, with the what is happening around us at the moment, and that is the Interplay album for sure. Yeah.
And I know it's been talked about a little bit, like even the jumping between the past and the present, because it's been talked a lot about,
it's
you
hard.
Know, yeah. Well, somebody brought up, you know, maybe it was even the original press releases, like there was even a little bit of the influence of the 80s pop or something in there, which I feel like's probably been painted more than maybe it actually was.
Yeah.
But I hear those moments. So. Yeah. Like hearing you all talk about it, you know, you've talked about Depeche Mode and Tears, but when I got that in my head, and this is where I took things further than I'm certain they intended to be, because Sunshine Chaser, is that the name of the song? Sunshine Chaser.
Sunrise Chaser, yeah.
That's it. Yeah,
Sunrise
Chaser. Yeah. Sunrise Chaser. Yeah. Like, there's a melody there that's really close to that song, Broken Wings, the '80s like cheesy pop ballad.
Broken. Oh yeah, I like Broken Wings. Yeah, take these broken wings. Yeah. What Yeah, maybe. I mean, I love so much space. We haven't played it yet live, but that was one that, because we've got a lot that we could play and we're trying to balance it. But yeah, I hear that. I mean, I think it's more, there was something comforting, like I say, when we went through that kind of feeling of that our existence was being threatened and are we going to be able to make another record? I think there was something comforting about tapping back to how we felt maybe in that time before we made our first record. And those were certainly records that we were listening to. I mean, I love Tears of Fears in the 80s. It's that sort of reminds you of, you know, the teenage you and why you wanted to be in a band in the first place to hear those songs again. Depeche Mode have never gone away from me. They've always just been there and just brilliant. And I saw them recently, a few months ago. So, yeah. And I guess as well, that's, you know, World in My Eyes is something when we were talking about the mix of I Came to See the Wreck. That was a reference point for sure, a song like that. And you know, I don't see why I aim with certain things. I want to aim big in a way. I'm not saying we want to suddenly be a stadium band, but I mean, I want this to do well, sort of ambitious with that, because then we can continue to do it. I mean, and if, you know, it's on the cusp, it's hard for bands to tour now. So you need some, you know, things to kind of keep moving up a little bit, you know, to still be able to do it. Because I mean, I don't think, you know, unless you're Ed Sheeran's, and obviously, which is a bit like reflected in society, it's like seems to be the rich or the very few at the top just get richer and bigger, and you know, and then there's a whole mid section where it's a struggle, you know, for everybody, and for many bands it's difficult. So it's yeah, we need it to do something, you know, to be able to continue to come and play. Otherwise we won't be able to do it. So it's like simple as that, really. And you know, that's our reality. It's not like we're not comfortable in any way. And I mean, it certainly keeps you hungry, and it certainly makes you, there's no room for complacency with us, or you know, because like I say, it's always tight, it's tough.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Mark Gardner of Ride. When Peace Sign came out, my first thought was, oh, wow, this is an anthem. This is big. This is a stadium song. You know, this is something that you feel,
yeah,
you know, the festival crowd with.
I think so, man, because obviously we have been playing a lot of bigger festivals. And so maybe that is, it's partly in. I mean, when we wrote those songs, I mean, that just came from one of the jams again. That was so not in our minds. But I think you probably get better in a way at crafting songs, and because of the, you kind of know what works well between you as a unit and how, you know, the dynamics between you and how we can work up songs. And that one for sure, I think Peace Sign, yeah, it was strange because I think it was written, you know, just after the Ukraine invasion from Russia, and then of course, you know, with obviously what's going on in Israel, and it's just, yeah, just the world is mad. It's like, it seems really, and then you sort of think, and actually Peace Sign was actually about the I forget his name now, the mountaineer guy, French guy.
Oh, right. I don't know the name, but I know you're talking about, yeah.
The Alpinist. Yeah, it was from, I mean, Andy had seen The Alpinist, and then we all watched it and it blew us away, the documentary. And he flashes the peace sign sort of, hey, before he goes and climbs these like crazy rocks. I mean, I'm not going to do a spoiler, because if you haven't seen it, The Alpinist is one of those incredible movies. It's like up there with me, like Man on Wire, where and there's a French connection there, you know, where people just do really out there things, and so, you know, and their reasons for it. But yeah, so that was kind of where it was at. But then I, as you just sort of feel, and obviously when I'm back in England, I'm quite tuned into news quite a lot. However, I've learned to have to turn it off a bit more at times now, because it's just quite depressing. That, yeah, you just think, well, actually, it's not a bad thing to try and be promoting again. It's just more people, peace sign. It's like a simple sign. And if more people were, you know, around the world could just be thinking peace sign. I know it sounds a bit hippie or whatever, but the world needs that now. More peace, less war, for sure.
Even if it's just war, you know, not subliminal, but you know, just by it is. It's the thought that just kind of the seed, right? The seed that's right there.
Exactly. I mean, because it's like, what are these conflict's really achieving them for anyway. It's just like, it's just ridiculous. It's nothing in the end. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So, you know, we're so advanced now, technology in so many ways, and yet, you know, we're still sort of Shakespearean in the sense that we're still poisoning and killing each other, and, you know, all that sort of stuff is still really present. We don't seem to, you know, be able to move on for that. Yeah, exactly. For what? It's frightening. And I mean, yeah, anyway, we'll not get too deep on that one, but we all know that, you know. I mean, I believe in, you know, it's the people that, I think most people are in the same boat with that, but obviously it's the people in power, it gets messed up.
Sort of similar, as going for the title, Stay Free. It almost feels simple, you know, in comparison to some of the record. I haven't heard much about that one, but it just naturally almost sets itself apart. Not in a way that feels disjointed, you know, almost as a respite, I guess. What's the story behind that one?
So, unfortunately, I can't exactly tell you that in entirety because that's an Andy track. Uh-huh. So I think I know that we did do a talk Mark Hollis tribute and I remember talking to Andy. We did The Rainbow and we did another track, and it's beautiful and airy, these songs. And I think there was a little bit of that involved in the feeling of how little was on some of those tracks. And I think it did make a bit of an impression on Andy at the time, because we did a lovely version of The Rainbow, and that's a very empty kind of sounding track. And I think that is a bit of, I mean, I might be completely wrong, but I hear that as a bit of an influence with that song, because I like I say, I think it reminded us how little you can have, but how rich it sounds, you know, with less is more completely. And yeah, I mean, I beyond that, I can't really comment, because like I say, it's one of Andy's gems, that one. So I wouldn't want to.
Right, it's a really nice one in there. But outside of, you know, so outside of the band though, speaking of yours, like here you are, the Ride album comes out and a Shoreline Dream drops a song, Everything Turns, and you already have music out in the world.
Yeah.
When creating is like breathing. That's how I feel from you.
Well, I'm just a really busy guy, to be honest with you. And creativity is a part of it. I mean, and you know, and I feel creative with all the mixing I'm doing and mastering in a way. Yeah. And that's it's a different kind of approach, because that really works on me coming fresh to music in a way, and just fine tweaking and, you know, yeah, and tuning in that way. But I mean, certainly, Ryan and I don't know, we got connected, I think, through Shauna at Shameless Promotions quite a while ago. And Ryan then, I thought, yeah, I'd heard bits and pieces he'd done, and he started to send me, just send me songs that you're making, and I'll see if anything really, I can really connect with something. And then that instrumental came through probably, I mean, a good 10 months ago now. It's quite a while ago. And I totally connected with it. I just thought, I love that track particularly. So let me try and do something with that vocally. And I was actually listening at the time quite a lot to, I love a song I come back to a lot is that Don't Give Up, the Gabriel and Kate Bush song. It's so beautiful. And I used it to test speakers and, you know, just interfaces and stuff in the studio. It's a song I come back to, because I think actually sonically it's really beautiful. So it did inform the lyric a bit, because the lyric a little bit is sort of like, you know, I used to feel wanted, I used to feel strong, you know the feeling that technology is sort of taken over and putting people out of work, and you know, do you still feel like dancing when everybody's sort of moved on and everyone's gone? It's kind of a bit like you're left in another time a bit, you know, that a lot of people, I think, are just feeling a little bit like, whoa, what do we do now? You know, it's like you're feeling like a bit of a spare part. So that was kind of, you know, and the system seems to be listening to us, because it's like everybody keeps commenting, you know, I was just talking about something the other day, then I get an advert on my, it's like the system listens, you know, it's kind of a bit of that sort of paranoia, technology paranoia involved in that one. But yeah, it came through really well. And also Ryan actually encouraged me to sort of film myself singing it, so that he then put me into the video a bit, I mean, it was all remote, you know, but he did a great job with that. And I've not sort of appeared on a video, a ride video, for quite a while. So it was sort of, thought, yeah, I'll do that again. Why not? I can be on a video again. That's fine. As long as it's fuzzy.
It's a cool track.
So yeah, it's good. It came good. And there's a couple of others which that I ended up working on the album as well, which will become evident soon as well.
Have you heard the Have you heard that new Peter Gabriel album that came out last year?
I haven't. No, I didn't even know there was one, to be honest with you. And I'm not like, you know, just because it's just certain things, tracks I just tap back into. And I mean, I'm a huge Kate Bush fan, and that little period of Peter Gabriel, a little time then, I just loved. And that collaboration, I thought was beautiful. But no, I haven't. Is it any good?
It's great. It finds him in a form that I haven't. Of course, he hasn't put out an actual album of original material probably 20 years before that, but he released a single.
Oh, I didn't realize it had been that long.
Yeah, he released.
I didn't even realize it had been that long.
Yeah, all year long on the full moon of every month, a new single on the full moon of every month, or new moon, or something like that.
Anyway. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and ended in December. It is. It's a great album, but it's just. I mean, we're in a rich period of artists from the 80s and into the late 80s, early 90s, like your era of Depeche Mode, fantastic record they put out, you know, the Memento Mori. And
yeah,
I was just thinking, though, it's like the has new music and Howard Jones keeps putting out good stuff. And I know these aren't the same stuff, but the era and it's so quality in ways that I don't find from the generation before. And there's still plenty of great 70s artists putting out music too, but I find more in the 80s, or maybe I'm just in tune with it. I don't know, but it's.
Yeah, I mean, really perhaps good. People start to feel. Yeah, and perhaps people are starting to feel that it's becoming so difficult to tour and to operate with music, and the money's sort of gone. So maybe people sort of feel a little bit that you just want to leave something, you know, amazing there. And it might make people. Like I say, less complacent, more hungry again, just to do something of real quality, because it might be the last thing people do. And you know, and I'm not saying speaking for other people, but I always sort of feel, I never know with Riot, this could be a lost album. I just don't know, because it's like there's no, do you know what I mean? There's no sort of steady career path with this. It's just, you just do not know. And I kind of always approach shows like it might be my last, and you just don't know. And I think that's the point. I mean, and I would say from my own point of view now, I was really happy with how Interplay came out. And I've said it a few times, I'm not planning on dying just yet, but I would be happy in the sense that I feel we hit real heights on this album. And I think we did with the previous two albums and all across all albums, but there's always stuff that niggles me with stuff we've done before. But with this album, I thought we really hit some high points, and it almost sort of vindicated why we came back together in 2015, you know, because I knew the chemistry was sort of, always felt the chemistry was always been great between us as a sort of creative entity, and if anything, even better now, because there's also, it's a lot easier as well for Steve and Loz to, like I said, they're all very onto their doors and stuff now. I think it was trickier for them in the 90s to put their song and creativity ideas across, because just by nature, me and Andy were the guys with acoustic guitars and voices. So I think now it's a lot more of an even spread, and that's why Interplay is a perfect title for this record, because those guys are great songwriters as well, and are really kind of contributing in that way, in a huge way. And I think that just makes it more interesting again and stronger as a result. It's not, you know, so yeah, I think it's a sort of weird evolution, but it's definitely one. But yeah, I that's interesting to hear, like you're saying that, I mean, about quality control is going up in that way. And I think, you know, and again, maybe also, I think everybody went through a crazy sort of strange time with COVID. So I think maybe also that sort of gave people a lot of reflection time, I don't know, to sort of go, if we're going to do something again, it's got to be great in case we're in another pandemic or whatever. I don't know.
Well, you all certainly did.
Threw everybody off, I think.
Yeah, Interplay is so good. I selfishly just hope you guys get off the road and go back into the studio and make more music, because what the three albums that you've done in this chapter two has been some of my favorite music you know, over this past 10 years. Seriously,
that's
I'm
brilliant.
So happy
so, yeah.
that you all are doing this.
I mean, I'm always in the studio. I am always in the studio, so the door's always open, obviously, with the guys. So I'm sure it could happen more. It's just making the economics work of, you know, touring and being able to kind of keep doing that is the tricky part. But I think there's, you know, we're all you know, giving it a good go.
Right on. Mark, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it today. Seriously, it's been a real pleasure. And I hope to see more shows out on this tour.
That's great. Yeah, thank you very much for all the good vibes. And it's a pleasure speaking to you.
My thanks to Mark. Ride's album Interplay is out now. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out of here so you can grab all the interviews that I put out every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org. Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Don't forget to leave the series a rating and a review. Always helps out a ton. After all that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s, the best in new music. You get bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from the band 10 years after: David Bowie, Amos Lee, Imani Coppola, Suzanne Vega, Natalie Merchant, Feist, Julie of the Wolves, Infinity Song, The Cramps, Eva Cassidy, R.E.M., Chuck Prophet, Joey Ladekin, Ani DeFranco, The Shins, The Scratch, Sparta, St. Vincent, Jay Som, and my interview with the cast of The Big Cigar, playing now on Apple TV+. Just an example of what you can hear when you tune in weeknights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like. Follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
I feel reset. So you got a little bit more, yeah, compass mentis at me than you would have done yesterday off fresh off the bus.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.